Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Your flight to Bristol has been delayed once again. For your entertainment purposes, please listen to the Baggage Claim Monday edition of the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney. The White Zone is for immediate unloading and loading of passengers only. No parking in the White Zone.
That's right. This is a Baggage Claim Monday. I'm Buster Olney. Producing on the podcast, of course, back in Bristol is Troy Farkas. And Troy, it's an unusual spot for a Baggage Claim Monday, but the typical chaos. Wouldn't you agree, based on what you're hearing?
Yeah, Buster, where the heck are you?
All right, so I was looking for a place in the hotel, and there wasn't really a quiet place. So maybe the most suitable place where I could, you know, talk about baseball early on a Monday morning here in Houston is in front of a steakhouse. 8 o'clock in the morning, just across from the hotel that I have, and what you hear in the background is the traffic running along Texas Street on a Monday morning as people go to work. Probably pretty excited about the Astros. What do you think?
Are there a lot of passerby, like, looking at you? What is this guy doing, all set up on the sidewalk with his computer in front of a steakhouse?
No, because there's not really foot traffic where I am. Plus, it's raining here. In Houston this morning. So I'm sure if people saw me, they'd be like, okay, it's just an idiot who's standing out in the rain, you know?
I'm sure that's happened before.
All right. On Friday, of course, in the American League Championship Series, the Yankees won with a four-run first inning against Justin Verlander. And then the series shifted on Saturday to Houston, with the off day having been lost with that rain out on Wednesday. The Astros had a 4-2 lead on Saturday in the ninth inning at Minute Maid Park. Closer Roberto Osuna on the mound. DJ LeMahieu with the plate with an extended at bat. This is the 10th pitch.
3-2 on the way, and a swing and a fly ball to right field. It is pretty deep. Springer is back. He jumps. It's gone. LeMahieu with an opposite field home run. Off Osuna here with the ninth inning, and it has tied the game. He hit it about a foot over the outstretched glove of George Springer into the first row of seats, and the Yankees have tied the game here in the ninth inning.
A disbelieving Dan Shulman on ESPN Radio. And Troy, I had a unique perspective for that game-tying home run, which we'll be talking about coming up here with Bob Nightingale of USA Today. But when you played that sound, Matt, I'm surprised by the number of Yankee fans in the ballpark in Houston. Play that again. Just to hear the crowd reaction to the home run.
3-2 on the way, and a swing and a fly ball to right field. It is pretty deep. Springer is back. He jumps. It's gone. LeMahieu with an opposite field home run. Off Osuna here with the ninth inning, and it has tied the game. He hit it about a foot over the outstretched glove of George Springer into the first row of seats, and the Yankees have tied the game here in the ninth inning.
Am I wrong? Troy, I mean,
no.
Man, there are a lot of Yankee fans.
No, you're not wrong at all. I mean, it just goes to show you, you know, we talk about in these major sports, America's teams, Yankees are one of those teams that you'll just find fans wherever they are. And even crazy, though, that, like, that's the ALCS, and they're getting that kind of reaction.
That's exactly right. Now, in the bottom of the ninth inning, the Yankees, as you would expect, they turned to Aroldis Chapman, their closer, for what they probably hoped was a couple of innings. George Springer drew a walk. Jose Altuve came to the plate with two outs.
The 2-1 to Altuve. A swing and a high fly ball to deep left field. It's over! He hit it out! Jose Altuve with a two-run bomb off Aroldis Chapman. And the Astros are going to the World Series.
Dan Shulman with that great call of the walk-off. And when Altuve hit the ball, Aroldis Chapman got this little grin on his face. So I'm going to wait for this Oak Farms dairy truck to pass, okay? But now it has. When Altuve hit the home run, Aroldis Chapman got this little grin on his face and on the mound like, are you kidding me? He was totally in disbelief. The Astros, on the other hand, they went absolutely bonkers. And you could feel that in my conversation with George Springer right after the home run was hit.
George, what was that like?
Oh, my God. I can't believe that just happened. From the low to the high. But all the credit in the world to Altuve, man. That's unbelievable.
All right, describe the LeMahieu home run from your perspective.
I knew he hit it pretty good. I was already playing back, so I knew if it was going to fall short, I was going to be able to get to it, and he hit it just far enough, man. That's unbelievable at bat by him. You know, he's a special player, and that's a special at bat.
Tell me what you saw in Jose's at bat.
Unbelievable. I don't even know how to explain it, describe it. That's one of the biggest swings in our organization's history. That's why he's our captain.
What do you think? You're going back to the World Series.
Oh, unbelievable. You know, that's a hell of a team over there, and you know, it's that was a fight, and a lot of respect for them. That's just crazy.
And I caught up with Justin Verlander.
How cool was that inning, Justin?
I mean, incredible. Can't put into words. I mean, seeing the ball come off the bat, I mean, I think everybody was out of the dugout. I was kind of like just waiting to make sure it went out, but I mean, can't script it. Just incredible.
That LeMahieu's home run, where were you at that moment?
I was down in the tunnel. I can't watch live, and I get too much anxiety. I mean, I thought off the bat we had a chance to catch it, but that guy, I mean, what a series. What an incredible baseball player. I mean, he was a thorn in our side the whole series, but hey, we were able to overcome it.
How does it feel to be back in the World Series?
Incredible. I mean, it hasn't set in yet. I mean, just standing here, you know, I'm trying to take it all in, just trying to see the crowd, feel the atmosphere, just kind of soak in as much as I can.
How about the pitching matchups we're going to see in the World Series?
It's incredible. I mean, I keep saying incredible, but it really is. I mean, the Nationals have a great rotation, have a great four starters. I like our rotation as well. I mean, it should be a great series. I'm not going to say incredible again. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be some really good baseball.
George Springer, Justin Verlander at a loss for words in all the emotion right after Altuve's home run. Here's Jose Altuve.
Jose, how much fun was that for you?
Well, you know, I'm happy, like I said before, and I thank God and I thank everybody in the ballpark because what happened today. We are a team that is working together. We're pulling in the same direction. For me, Yuli, three-run homer, creating some momentum, setting the tone. Springer just walking in the last inning, put a lot of pressure on the other team. Michael Brantley made a terrific play that maybe because you never know what will happen. But I'm really happy, and like I said, I thank God because we're going to the World Series.
Lots of highs and lows in that ninth inning. Describe from your perspective when LeMahieu hits the home run.
Well, you know, I didn't give up because we've been in this situation before. We've been winning. They tied the game. We lose. We come back. This is the thing we are. We are working as a team. And, you know, we really deserve to be in the World Series because all the effort we put this year.
Jose Altuve, maybe the most composed guy on the field after hitting that walk-off home run. Aaron Boone, also very composed, maybe because he knows something about walk-off home runs. He, of course, ended the 2003 American League Championship Series with one swing of the bat. He was in a press conference talking about the cruelty of sports.
You know, I feel like we are on equal footing with them. You know, unfortunately, sports can be a little bit cruel for the team that goes home, and such can happen in a series. You know, I think we're a better team this year than we were last year, and we'll work very hard in the winter, you know, in every phase, you know, from the front office and the decisions we make with what players we bring in, what players we lose, things like that that are inevitable. Continue to try to pour into our guys in the off season about, you know, things to focus on to help them improve their game individually. I feel like we've made a lot of strides in that area. But the work never ends, and we'll continue to try and, I guess, close that gap or put ourselves in a position to get over the hump. And, you know, I know everyone in our room believes we will, and, you know, we'll have a lot of battle scars when we do finally get to the top of that mountain.
In the Yankees clubhouse right after the game, right after Aaron Boone met with the team, the media walked in. I've never seen a scene like it. The players were absolutely devastated, and the only sound that you heard in the first 5 minutes was the sound of backs being slapped because guys were giving each other these big hugs. They were going over to Aroldis Chapman. They were trying to comfort him in that moment of defeat. Aaron Judge eventually spoke with reporters.
It's a failure. You know, in spring training, we talked about winning the division and, you know, putting ourselves in a good spot in the postseason, you know, to win a World Series. And we came up short, you know, and so it's, you know, no matter how many games we won the regular season or, you know, what else we did, you know, it's the season's a failure.
This is Brett Gardner talking about the Yankee season.
You know, this definitely isn't how we thought it would end. Even going into yesterday, down 3-1, still love the team that we have, still felt good about our chances, and, you know, obviously, you know, just ended up the way we wanted. We had some chances, but at the end of the day, we just, like I said, we got beat by a really good team, and we came up short.
So today, Monday, will be a workout day for the Washington Nationals, who are traveling from Washington to Houston today, and for the Houston Astros, and the World Series will start on Tuesday. In Game 1, Max Scherzer starting for the Nationals against Gerrit Cole of the Astros. On Sunday, the sport got absolutely terrible news. Umpire Eric Cooper passed away at age 52, the announcement coming from Major League Baseball. And we'll talk more about this because Eric Cooper was widely respected and so beloved. Let's get to it. Bob Nightingale covers baseball for USA Today. And, Bob, I want to get, first off, good morning. How you doing today?
Yeah, doing great, Buster. Thanks.
So I want to get from what we saw on Saturday night, an incredible ninth inning, and what you experienced. I got to tell you, you know, I was getting ready to do the on-field interviews after the game. And so in order to do that, what they have us do is stand in this little alleyway that leads out onto the field, and from that perspective, you can't see the whole field. All I had is this sliver of the field that I could see, where this little area that was between the pitcher's mound and home plate. And so I could see the pitches come in, the baseball pass by. I couldn't see the actual hitter, but then you could see if the baseball was hit, which direction it was going. And so I'm standing in that alleyway when LeMahieu is up. And when I see the ball leave the bat, I'm like, uh-oh, that one's got a chance. And Troy and I were talking about how when the ball goes over the fence, first off, I think everyone was waiting to see if Springer could catch it. But also, when it clears the fence, man, there are a lot of Yankee fans in that place. They were going crazy. Give it to me from your perspective, what you saw.
What's funny is when the Astros didn't score there in the eighth inning, they had so many chances. Judge makes a great play. I said, I don't like this for the Astros. You know, I thought Osuna was going to blow this thing, and he did. And I thought he was going to keep giving it up. It's almost like, okay, you know, there's a game-tying home run. You know, the Yankees are going to keep on scoring. And when they didn't, I said, okay, it should be a great finish here. I didn't think Altuve was going to go deep. I thought he had a chance to keep the rally going. So, yeah, it was an amazing ninth inning. You know, one of the craziest ninth innings I've ever seen.
Yeah, and then Altuve, bottom of the ninth inning, again, we just have that sliver, and you know Chapman's coming in. And you know at that point, once the Astros blow the lead, that A.J. Hinch, because it's been a bullpen game and all the pitching changes, probably A.J. Hinch is sitting there thinking, oh, my God, if this game goes deep into extra innings, what am I going to do? And on the Yankees side,
yeah, right,
as Aroldis Chapman comes into the game, they're thinking, boy, if we can just get a couple of innings out of Chapman, maybe even extend it for a third inning if necessary. And you know that because the Yankees have had their experience this year with all the injuries and overcoming that, once LeMahieu hits the home run, they're absolutely convinced that they're going to win the game. But George Springer draws a walk. Altuve comes to the plate. And I got to tell you that, you know, in the time that he's been in baseball, he has gotten to a point now where he has such a low heart rate in situations like this, and he absolutely was sitting on a slider. He's facing Aroldis Chapman, who throws 99, 100 miles per hour. And when he swings and he hits the ball, I could see it go, and it was a no-doubter. Like, that was the one sliver of the field that I could see was out toward left center field, and you're like, okay, that's gone. And Chapman gets that little grin on his face like, can you believe it ended this way? And in the mayhem of the Astros after the game, the guy who seemed to be the most calm still was Jose Altuve. How was that moment for you?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. Yeah, the smallest face, like I'm in shock. Josh Reddick said when the count got 2-0 on Altuve that he leaned over to Brantley and said, this game's over. He's going deep right here. So Reddick called it. And, you know, he swung on that slider. It was just kind of hanging there. And the plate just absolute bedlam. You know, the Astros still had a couple more relievers yet. The Yankees were out of pitching. So I'm not sure if the Yankees would have done. But the Astros said, you know, we'll keep going to the bullpen. We're not going to pitch Garrett Cole here. We still save him for game seven. But yeah, you know, they took advantage of the Yankees. Yankees were doing one of those bullpen games. And, you know, those guys are tired. That rainout, I think, you know, we talked about this, Buster, is that I think the rainout wiped out the Yankees. There's no way they could have won four games in a row with that bullpen.
Yeah, and AJ Hinch said after the game that Garrett Cole was sitting alongside him or would stop over and talk to him, and he kept on lobbying to pitch in game six. And AJ's like, no. No, no, no. And so I think from his perspective, he was not only happy when they walked it off with Altuve's home run, but he probably was relieved. I wrote about Altuve in my Sunday column about he has such a unique perspective, you know, about baseball. When I remember last year when he signed his $155 million contract extension, I saw him a little bit after that and, you know, tell him congratulations. And he looks at me and goes, I'm overpaid. And I just burst out laughing, and I said, Jose, you were so underpaid. Like, his first 5 years of his career, he's MVP, he wins Silver Sluggers, he's on the All-Star team, he's a Gold Glove winner, and he made a total of $12 million for all that production. So I said to him, you know, based on how teams evaluate these things, Jose, if you never played another inning, you would be underpaid. Based on how good you've been, and based on what you're going to get going forward, he goes, no, I'm overpaid. And he's thinking of it more like globally. Like, I get to play baseball for a living, and they pay me all this money, and, you know, how cool is that? And that perspective really hasn't changed in the time that I've known him. As last week on the workout day, I walked up to him, and I said, hey, what are you going to do when you get done playing baseball? And he said, yeah, I might want to, you know, go into scouting. That would be interesting. And I asked him, you know, are you going to get a place someplace in California or, you know, in Hawaii? And he said, no, way too expensive. I can't buy a place. Those places are way too expensive. And I was like, Jose, you can buy a house anywhere in the world. You have that kind of wealth. He goes, no, too expensive. And then he thought about it. He goes, maybe Costa Rica, because I think I could get a place for cheaper down there. He seems to... You know, complete. He's one of those people who seems to fully appreciate what he has and what he gets to do, and the fact that he can play baseball for a living.
Yeah, no, unbelievable guy, and you know, the Astro players couldn't have been happier to see him becoming a hero. You know, is the you know, they'll build a statue of him someday outside the ballpark here at Minute Maid. Yeah, just a you know, the ultimate teammate in you know, to a T. Those guys say it couldn't happen to a better guy. They're glad he was a hero, and not any of them.
So I went into you. I know you stayed on the field for the Astros as they went through their celebration after Game 6. I went into the Yankees clubhouse. Bob, I've never seen a clubhouse like that after a loss. And, you know, you and I have experienced a lot of clubhouses in defeat. But the first 5 minutes we were in there, there was no sound. You had players bent over in front of their lockers. This is right after Aaron Boone got done speaking, and we actually saw him going at the last his last hugs with players. You know, Aaron Judge standing in front of his locker, just staring into his locker. They were absolutely convinced that, I think, after all they'd been through this year, that they were going to find a way to win that game and win in that series. And it was striking to me to hear, you know, the words of Aaron Judge talking about this season being a failure for the Yankees. I hope that as time goes on, that perspective changes, because they just had a remarkable season. And look, they may have been the second best team in baseball, getting beat by the first best team in baseball.
Yeah, they might have. You know, but like Justin Verlander said, it is a reason we're starters and they're relievers. You know, we're used to going deep. They're not. And, you know, when those guys had to play four straight games, it's like there's no way that bullpen can handle it. You know, I think enough and else, it's like, particularly the World Series now, it's like, hey, you got to have some starters to go deep. And so we're going to have some of the greatest starting, you know, the starters in the World Series of all time. You know, when you're talking about Verlander and Scherzer and Strasburg and Gerrit Cole, I mean, it should be a dynamic World Series, but they're all great starters. And the Yankees didn't have that. And I think the Yankees have got to go out and grab a big starter, some kind of winner.
I was just going to ask you that, if you feel like that what we've seen in this postseason might alter the Yankees' perspective moving forward, that this winter, and let's face it, you've got the big dog in the free agent market, what we've talked about, Gerrit Cole being available. Then from that point, it's a step down to guys like Zach Wheeler. I don't know if the Yankees, you know, a month ago would have said, yes, we're going to take a run at Gerrit Cole, but I think even if everyone believes that the Angels are the team to beat, I think the Yankees still have to throw a big number out there. What about you?
Oh, I do. I mean, I think they got to go after Gerrit Cole. I mean, look at the Astros. You know, we talked about them being with the analytics and everything else. But the three big boys, they all traded for, you know, with that farm system. Whether, you know, Gerrit Cole from the Pirates and then the Verlander, of course, from the Tigers and Greinke from the Diamondbacks. So, yeah, I think if they don't grab Gerrit Cole, they've got to go trade for somebody. You know, same thing, you know, the Nationals just spend money, but they got, you know, four guys. So I think the Yankees have to do something there, spend money or make a trade to get a big-time starter.
All right, this was interesting. As we spin forward now to the World Series, which begins on Tuesday, Caesars Sportsbook sent out their odds on Sunday evening, and the Astros are the biggest World Series favorite since 2007. That, of course, was the year that the Red Sox were heavy favorites to beat the Rockies. With the numbers that they use in Vegas, the Astros are minus 235 favorites to beat the Nationals, who are a plus 195. I don't really know what those numbers mean. I've never really bet on baseball, and so don't have the same perspective maybe as I could give you on football betting odds. But it surprised me a little bit because I feel like the Nationals, that's a really good team, and they're the one team that can probably go toe-to-toe with the Astros of that rotation you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm surprised, too, is that it was lopsided. You know, the biggest odds is 2007. I will say I think the layoff is going to could kill them. I mean, you're talking about not having played now in a week. And I was in Detroit both times when they swept the ALCS in second round, and they got wiped out by they had an 8-day layoff. They got wiped out, you know, 1 year by the Cardinals, 1 year by the Giants. And those hitters get so rusty. The pitchers isn't a big problem, but the hitters were brutal. And you wonder if that's the same thing here with the Washington Nationals by just, you know, by sitting around for a week now. You know, what's going to happen to that lineup? Will they, you know, can they adjust? I'm not sure about that. I know with the Tigers and Jim Loon tried everything. Nothing worked.
Yeah, they talked about simulated games and live batting practice and all those things to keep the hitters fresh. But in 2006, you know, the Tigers wound up getting wiped out in the World Series. In 2012, they wound up getting wiped out in the World Series by the Giants, and it never worked for them in either year. You made reference to Asuna and the fact that you almost had an expectation he was going to blow that save. I got to tell you that, to me, if you look at the Astros in the Achilles heel, it is Asuna, who I think now has demonstrated repeatedly that October might be a challenge for him. That might be the one thing that they would have to overcome. And maybe, you know, the Nationals' best chances in this World Series is going to be the fact that their bullpen at least seems to have some stability, where you still wonder about the back end of the Houston rotation.
Yeah,
I mean, Houston bullpen. What do you think?
Yeah, that bullpen is a little bit shaky, particularly with Osuna. But of course, that was the Nationals. You know, so both those rotations are built very similar, except for the Nationals can go four deep in that rotation because of Anibal Sanchez. And the Astros don't have that fourth guy. So, yeah, very, very similar in that. So, late innings, I don't know what's going to happen. But, yeah, Asuna was kind of shaky down the stretch. You know, he was okay, but just, you know, there was a lot of games, just like we saw the other night, where he blows it and the team wins. So I'd be surprised if we don't see at least one blown save by these two teams, you know, during the series.
All right, I want to ask you about some other topics. Over the weekend, Baseball America reported that Major League Baseball is looking at a possible streamlining of the minor leagues, where you could see a number of teams at the lower minor league level cut. This, when I read it, it wasn't that surprising to me because I feel like, you know, Rob Manfred's time as commissioner, he is, I think, picking up the ball from the legacy of Bud Selig. He's looking for ways for the owners to make money. And there has been a sense in the industry, at least among teams, that the minor leagues are a little bit bloated, that they're probably more teams than what they need. So it doesn't surprise me that they're looking to cut costs in that way. What about for you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're kind of fearful of the loss of jobs and everything else. It would make sense, at least if nothing else, is just kind of a threat to some of these minor league clubs. Like, hey, we got to, you know, you got to raise your standards here. You got to have a better clubhouse, a better field. Let's make this a, you know, a better place for the minor league players to play, or else you're out. You know, it's almost like the old days when they're talking about wiping out some of the major league clubs, you know, when the Minnesota Twins and Montreal and stuff, and said, you know what, we're going to contract. Unless you guys get better, we're going to contract your clubs. So maybe a little bit like that, almost a threat, like, let's say, let's get things better here, or else you're gone. And we'll get some more minor league teams to replace you.
And before you go, I want to ask you about the managerial positions that are still up for grabs. These decisions, I think some of them could come down as soon as today. We'll run through job by job. Cubs, what's the latest that you've heard there? What I hear is, you know, Joe Espada going in for another interview, but it's still, in the end, David Ross's job to say yes or no to.
Yeah, I'm with you, Buster. I still think it's David Ross. I think Espada is making things interesting. Obviously, they like both these guys a lot, but Ross is so revered there. I still like David Ross with the Cubs.
With the Mets, they are going to talk to Carlos Beltran again. They're going to talk to our colleague Eduardo Perez again. I would not be surprised if Beltran at some point is offered the job. I don't know whether or not he's going to take it. And, of course, you know, you're talking about a player who made over $200 million in his career. The Mets would have to make it worth his while. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm starting to think that Beltran will get off of the job and will take it, which I'm shocked. I can't believe they're not hiring an experienced manager. I mean, you just went through this with Mickey Callaway. I think it's a mistake. You know, nothing against Eduardo or Carlos, but I think it's a mistake not to hire experienced guys in New York.
The Phillies, it seems like the guys they're looking at are experienced. What's your take on where that's headed?
Yeah, I love the direction I'm looking. I think Dusty Baker is definitely going to play there. My gut tells me it's a, you know, it's going to be Buck Showalter, you know, who would be great. But, you know, Dusty, you know, could be the owner's choice, John Middleton. So I think it's a tough call there. So I think it's either Buck or Dusty.
And what's the latest you hear on the San Diego Padres job?
I think it's Ron Washington. I'm at the point now where I'd be shocked if it's not. So I think it's a great choice. I think Ron Washington is a perfect guy for the Padres. He's going to, you know, perfect instructor, Dolina, Manny Machado, and everything else. So I'm thrilled. I think he's the perfect guy for that team. And that team's ready to win. And I think that Ron Washington is a perfect guy at this juncture with the Padres. So, yeah, I'd be shocked if it's not Ron.
You know, what's interesting about that is that, and I talked to you and Scott Miller about this when we were in the interview room the other day, as Wash has gotten older, I think the filter has gone. Like, you know, because he has strong opinions about things, and I'm going to be really interested to see if there are moments when, you know, a guy in the Padres doesn't run out of ball or doesn't execute in the right way, if he's going to be blunt as a sledgehammer in dealing with that. What do you think?
Oh, I think he will. I mean, I think if he, you know, Manny doesn't run out of ball, you know, he won't think twice about mentioning him or anybody else for that matter. So, I think he's the right guy. He's not going to be afraid of the players. It's like, you know what, I'm 67 years old. I'm going to do what I think is right. I think he's going to run a tight ship there. So, no, I'm with you, Buster. I think I really think he's the perfect guy at this point for the Padres.
All right, Bob. Well, good to talk with you. I'll see you at the ballpark later.
All right. Sounds great. Thanks, Master.
Jumping into the numbers.
After evaluating millions of pieces of data in the blink of an eye, the runner is Cincinnati by 200 points. Why, you worthless hunk of junk.
This is Hembo Knows.
Paul Hembakides is Hembo, and of course he's the head honcho of the show Get Up, or at least that's what he tells us. He's also a huge baseball nerd, like the rest of us who work on this show. And Hembo, first off, as we get started, I want to get a prediction from you about this World Series. I was surprised seeing the odds that came out last night that the Astros are the biggest favorite in more than a decade going into the World Series.
Yes, I was fairly surprised by the by how much they were favored, just like you were. I'm not surprised that they are. But I actually favor the Nationals in this series, and I'm going to pick them to win in seven games, because if you go back, we always talk about May 23rd as being that sort of cutoff. After their first 50 games, the Nationals are as good as any team in baseball. In fact, they own a better record than the Astros since that date, and they own a better run differential. They also average more runs per game than the Astros, and that's really the calling card of this Houston Astros team, which obviously can, you know, hit homers with anybody. But I'm actually of the opinion that the Nationals stack up very well in this series because of the way that the pitching favors them, at least among the starters. They've demonstrated that more of their starters can consistently get outs this postseason than the Astros have, in my judgment. They're also much less home run reliant, and as I'll get to here in a few minutes, that's a really big thing in World Series play.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that for a lot of casual fans, there's a perception about the Nationals that they're this team that's going on this tremendous postseason run, that after getting through the wild card game, they're getting hot, and that's how they got to the World Series. And I've been saying, no, this is a team that's been really good for about 4.5-5 months.
Yes, and the numbers support that. Yes, they did require eighth-inning comebacks and to get past the wild card game and to get past the Dodgers, but they just absolutely steamrolled the Cardinals, and we have 5 months of data that says they're about as good as anybody, and during large stretches of that time, they were without some of their best pitchers. So I'm not surprised that they're here, and I am surprised that they're considered such a heavy underdog in Vegas. Maybe I'm the stupid one, but I'd be surprised if the series is in at least go six games.
I picked the Astros in six. You know, and let's face it, I just have full allegiance to my tweet that I sent out in January predicting that the Astros would win the World Series. So even if the Astros are underdogs, I'd still be picking them because, like all nerds,
oh, yeah,
I want to be able to say that
only,
I was right.
The only thing worse than beating a dead horse, Buster, is a dead horse beating you.
All right, let's go through your notes. You know, it's two interesting ways these teams are built.
Yeah, well, most teams are prioritizing young, cost control talent. The Astros and the Nationals have built World Series teams doing the exact opposite. In fact, this year marks just the fifth time that the oldest teams in both leagues meet in the Fall Classic, Buster. Most recently, it happened when the Yankees and Diamondbacks met in 2001. And I just find that, for one, absolutely fascinating, because while both of these teams have done an extraordinary job in scouting and player development, both domestically and internationally, I think you and I can both agree that without the trades, without the free agents, these teams aren't here. So while most of the league is zigging, these teams have zagged, and I think they're in the World Series because of it.
All right, what works better in the World Series, home runs or manufacturing runs?
Well, recent history at least shows that homer-reliant teams don't fare as well in the Fall Classic as their counterparts. In the previous 10 years, Buster, only 34% of runs scored by World Series winners came via the home run. The average percentage for losers in that time is 45, and that trend bodes well for the Nationals. In the LCS, Washington scored only 2 of its 20 runs on homers, while 15 of Houston's 22 runs came that way. Lastly, the Nats have won 3 consecutive postseason games in which they fail to homer. The Astros have lost 6 straight such games dating to 2017.
And I think everybody in baseball is fired up with the pitching matchups in games 1 and 2. You have Max Scherzer for the Nationals going up against Gerrit Cole. And then in game 2, Justin Verlander against Steven Strasburg.
Never in World Series history, Buster, have pitchers who combine for at least 550 regular season strikeouts opposed each other on the mound. But it's going to happen twice in the next 3 days. Max Scherzer and Gerrit Cole combined for 569, while Strasburg and Verlander combined for 551. According to the Elias Sports Bureau, the record for such a thing had been 548. Bob Gibson and Denny McClain combined for that many in 1968, wow, the year of the pitcher, and squared off in games 1 and 4 of the World Series that year.
All right, and before we go, I want to ask you about the Yankees as they move forward and they begin their offseason planning after getting beat in the American League Championship Series. In a column I did on ESPN.com on Sunday, you know, 2 of the 3 priorities I mentioned were they have to upgrade their rotation. And I know that it's not the instinct of Brian Cashman or the current regime to spend huge on pitching, but they have to take their shot at Gerrit Cole, in my opinion, and throw out a big number, much in the same way they did with CC Sabathia, an investment that certainly paid off in 2009 when they won the World Series. And I also think while, you know, during the regular season they put up big numbers, you mentioned that in the postseason that home run oriented offense doesn't necessarily work. I think they got to get more left-handed, and they got to shave down some of these DH right-handed slugger types and get more balance. What do you think?
So do I. I mean, first of all, their ballpark favors lefties. I read your column yesterday, and I agree with the sentiment, especially in regards to the pitching. I think we can both agree that one of the biggest reasons that the Astros and the Nationals are here is because of the quality and depth of the starting pitching. Like, you can get through a 162-game season with the roster that the Yankees constructed and even win 100 games doing it that way, and that's all well and good. But we now have a formula here going back for a few years that this just doesn't work, and doesn't mean it necessarily can't work in the future, but eating innings in the postseason is a whole different animal. And that's the reason the Astros won that series. It's the reason the Nationals are in the World Series. The Yankees have not splurged financially the way that you would have expected, at least over the last handful of years. I think this is the offseason that needs to change, whether it's Gerrit Cole or whether it's Steven Strasburg if he opts out. They might just have to bite the bullet, go for it, because otherwise they might just find themselves running into this juggernaut that is the Houston Astros and other teams like it in the American League moving forward. They need to be able to eat innings in the postseason.
All right, Hembo. Thanks for doing this. Great to talk with you, and we'll talk to you again on Wednesday.
Yes, sir. Enjoy the series.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world, and in this year's World Series. Or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, it's been on the record. You were the guy who came up, who refined the Nationals logo when they moved to Washington. So give us some background on the Nationals logo and the Astros logo.
All right, so a couple of things. When the Montreal Expos, of course, moved to D.C., took a little while to get that deal going, but I designed the original Nationals logo, the primary logo, and I did it in a hotel room in Boston on a laptop during the World Series between the Red Sox and the Cardinals. But, of course, the Nationals, to this day, wear the curly W that we talked about last week with Sarah Langs, the Walgreens curly W that was previously worn by the Washington Senators starting in 1963. This mark, the story was, just, and it's out there, when the city and Major League Baseball cut a deal to build a stadium, and MLB, of course, owned the Expos at that point. The city fathers of the District of Columbia, they show up for a press conference, and they are wearing Cooperstown Collection Washington Senators caps, red with the curly white W. And here we are all these years later. I don't know, Buster, the Nationals have taken a shine to their Navy caps because it seems to be good luck, but there you go.
That's awesome. All right, what about the Astros?
The Astros, it's interesting. They started life as the Colt 45s in 1962, of course, with a 4, a 5, and an S on the front of their caps. They become the Astros several years later, partially because of the fact that they were moving to the Astrodome. The other part of that is the fact that there was a trademark dispute with the Colt Firearms Company, so they couldn't be the Guns A-Blazin' Colt 45s. They become the Astros. They were navy and orange, and eventually over the years, as all logos and cap logos evolve, the Astros, as you might recall, became brick and black color, brick, black, and buff. These were the colors of team owner Drayton McLean's company. So when Jim Crane and he took over the club, bought the club, and going into, 2013, they're going to move to the American League. The Astros pivot back to their original orange and navy, and what a time of success it's been since they did that, Buster.
I got to tell you, among the caps that I own, one of my favorite ones is the Astros cap with a Rays logo, the circular Rays logo on the front of it. That one, yeah. You know, when I take my dog on a walk, that is my favorite. And I got to tell you, too, knowing that you were involved in the Nationals design, that my cap that I'm going to purchase in this year's World Series is the one that has the World Series logo on with your work on the front. So I can always think about you when I go for walks with my dogs wearing that cap.
Pretty amazing. I feel like I'm working with a celebrity here in Todd Radom. I never get to do that.
Wow. That cheap shot.
I'm just saying, I'm among baseball royalty right here with Todd.
Troy. I mean, this is unbelievable. Wow. And in thinking back to the origins of the Nationals, I do recall being with Buster at the American League Championship Series in Boston that year. And, you know, just the fact that the Red Sox get over the hump and all kinds of memories 15 years ago. Unbelievable. And here the Washington Nationals are. First World Series to be played in the District of Columbia since 1933. Coming up for games 3 and 4, and I'll be there.
That'll be awesome. All right, let's get to this week's quiz.
All right, guys. So, as I just said, the Washington Nationals will play in their first World Series game. It's going to be tomorrow night in Houston. So here's this week's question. What was the most recent team to have won their first ever World Series game? Was it A, the 2008 Rays, B, the 2001 Diamondbacks, C, the 2002 Angels, or D, the 82 Brewers? The most recent team to have won their first ever World Series game. 08 Rays, 01 D-backs, 02 Angels, 82 Brewers.
Troy, which one? Because I know the answer.
All right, wait. So repeat the question.
Pressure's on. I love this. Pressure's on. Because
wow.
I'm telling you, I
Buster
know it.
Buster seems confident.
Hold on. Repeat
the most
question.
The most recent team to have won their first ever World Series game. Most recent.
Okay.
Rays, Diamondbacks, Angels, Brewers.
Diamondbacks.
Wow. You know what? I got less confident because I listened to the wording of your question again. It wasn't just winning a World Series game for the first time. It was winning their first World Series game. Correct?
Correct.
Man. So you already made your choice. You said Diamondbacks, Troy?
I did.
So the question is, and I can't remember if the Rays won Game 1 of the 2008 World Series. My instinct is, my memory serving me, that yes, in fact, it was the Diamondbacks. I know they won Games 1 and 2, so I'm going to say the Diamondbacks.
Well, you're both celebrities and you're both very smart, because the 2001 Arizona
nice.
Diamondbacks win Game 1 of the World Series 9-1 against the New York Yankees. We will see what the Nats do tomorrow night in Houston.
Absolutely. Todd, I appreciate it. Great to talk with you, and I'm sure I'll get to see you during the World Series at some point.
I hope so. Good luck.
Bleacher Tweets.
Okay, Buster. Great conversation today on the pod. Let's go to the Bleacher Tweets. First one comes from P.K. Steinberg. At P.K. Steinberg, with offseason and spring training work, is DJ LeMahieu the Yankees' best option at first base, assuming the other planned infielders are all healthy again?
Yeah, P.K., I think he's going to be at second base next year, because Didi Gregorius did not look good this year and coming back from Tommy John surgery. And unless I think Didi basically gives the Yankees a team-friendly deal, I wouldn't be shocked if he moves on and Gleyber Torres becomes the Yankee shortstop, with LeMahieu moving to second base and maybe Miguel Andujar shifting to first base with Urshela at third. So my guess is that LeMahieu is going to be at second base. But let's face it, wherever he is, he's really good.
Yeah, whatever happens, it's a good problem for Aaron Boone to have. Here's another one from Diddy at Lamar_Pierre. Hey, guys, during Game 6, I know Zach Greinke doing a lot of grunting while pitching, but not on every pitch. Do you think that is purposeful to throw off the hitters, or do batters even notice?
You mean like a tennis player with the screams that you have in tennis? No, I don't think he does it on purpose. I think that just depends on what he's trying to do on a particular pitch. You know, really spin a breaking ball or put a little extra oomph on a fastball. I don't think Zach thinks that way, where he wants to, you know, deceive hitters or try to trick hitters with the oomph.
Another one here from CrossFit School Sweat. At School Sweat, is the average with runners in scoring position becoming somewhat meaningless? Seems that regardless of where the runners are, almost every hitter is just going for the launch angle and trying to put one out with every at-bat.
School, to your point, I would agree with you. For some hitters, it is irrelevant, because some hitters have the exact same approach from the first pitch to the end of the at-bat. On the other hand, you get guys like LeMahieu. You know, DJ said during the American League Championship Series, and speaking with reporters, I hate striking out. I know George Springer feels the same way. Other guys actually do change their two-strike approach. Gleyber Torres does. Those are the guys for whom I think that stat does matter.
Debbie Gammons Brown at D. Gammons Brown. Why are, quote, different baseballs used in the postseason, and has this always been the case?
Yes, and it's because they have the World Series logo on them. So the baseballs are going to be different in terms of what's on the face. And, of course, in doing that, as I've talked about in recent weeks, the players perceive that there is a difference in the baseball. Whether or not that's true, I don't know, but there is a different logo on the baseballs.
Final one this morning from Reggie Deal at BaseballNerd07. Buster, with the Mariners being the last team standing that has not made it to a Fall Classic, which happens first? The Mariners make a World Series, or the 31st and 32nd future expansion teams make the World Series?
Yeah, Troy, I know your brother Brady is going to be very invested in this question. I don't think there's any doubt. I think expansion will happen before the Mariners make it to a World Series.
Wow.
You know, the Mariners are a long way away from relevancy, and on the other hand, I do think within a decade we're going to have the two expansion teams.
Man, that's insane. Sorry, Brady, but thank you for the tweets this morning. Keep them coming every day, all throughout the World Series. Use the hashtag BleacherTweets.
One last thing.
I mentioned baseball got absolutely terrible news on Sunday that Eric Cooper, 52-year-old umpire, passed away. And, you know, in my job on Sunday Night Baseball, part of that is to cue the first pitch. So before every Sunday night game, we'd go into the umpire's room with our producer, Andy Reichwald, and we talked to the umpires. And I've just really enjoyed over the last decade getting to know Eric Cooper. What a great guy. You know, always with a big smile, always positive, always wearing a Notre Dame jersey, a huge Notre Dame fan. And he'd wear that jersey as the umpires would be playing spades or some sort of game. And I know that my experience with Eric was also something that players experienced, because after news about his passing came out on Sunday, you saw a lot of social media postings from players, from Anthony Rizzo and others, talking about Eric and his positive personality. And I got this text from Caleb Joseph, the longtime catcher, and I think he expressed the feelings of a lot of people in baseball. When he wrote to me about Eric, he said he was truly one of the best, deeply cared about getting it right and doing a great job. I'll never forget how gracious he was behind the plate for my debut. I had him in a spring training game that year, and he told Buck Showalter that I could really catch. There's not a doubt in my mind that helped me make it that year. I'm just devastated. So terrible news for Major League Baseball about Eric. Terrible news for the umpires. And our condolences to his family and to folks around baseball who knew him. That's it for today. My thanks to Todd Radom, to Bob Nightingale, to Hembo, and to Troy Farkas producing back in Bristol. Have a good day, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.